Dov Zakheim is senior advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, former comptroller at the Department of Defense, and now a member of the Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization Commission, as that commission is wrapping up its work for a February release. And Dov, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I want to start with the budget process. Speaker Boehner and the new majority leader, Senator McConnell, have promised a discussion about budget issues at large earlier rather than later, sooner rather than later, in the new 114th Congress. The Defense Department is already making its case for getting rid of the sequester for fiscal 2016, but right now, nothing doing in that area. And so sequester the law of the land as we prepare for fiscal 2016. Does it surprise you? And do you think it's a good idea that the Pentagon is trying this time to get out in front of the sequester issue rather than waiting for something to happen later?
No, it's absolutely the right thing to do. The real question in my mind is not so much the Pentagon getting in front of it, but will the president get in front of it? If you recall, Mr. Gates was worried about this, and Mr. Panetta was very vocal about this, extremely vocal. It didn't matter. And one of the reasons it didn't matter was because the White House was almost silent on the issue. And the White House has never gone back on its fundamental belief, which the president articulated, that defense has to contribute its quote-unquote fair share to dealing with debt issues and budget reduction, budget deficit reduction issues, and so on. And as long as that's the prevailing mentality in the White House, it's not at all clear to me that defense can do it all by itself. The president has to weigh in if something's going to be done about the sequester.
What is encouraging to me about the conversation, as you frame it, though, Dov, is we see Secretary Carter, who is the likely SecDef to take over from Secretary Hagel. His confirmation hearing date now set, and we have details on that at federalnewsradio.com. No significant opposition has shown up for his nomination, and he was one of those voices, along with the secretaries that you mentioned a moment ago, who was quite vocal in opposition to sequester and talked about the danger that it presented. So I don't know that there's any reason for us to suspect that he'd change his mind at this point.
Oh, not in the least. As I say, defense has never been the problem, really, and certainly Ash Carter, who's very, very articulate and has had to live through the sequester, after all, knows what damage that it can cause. He had to somehow manage the Pentagon with a sequester sort of hanging all over him. So it's not at all surprising that he would be supportive of fixing this problem as soon as possible. The question still remains, can, for example, defense be dealt with apart from everything else in the budget, which is, of course, what defense proponents would like, or must it be part of a larger mix? And once it becomes part of a larger mix, you get into the whole debate over entitlements and so on, and that makes the whole issue much murkier. But clearly, the Defense Department is absolutely correct in pointing out the damage that the sequester could do to our not just our readiness, but our readiness in the future in terms of R&D and acquisition generally.
I also get a sense from conversations that I've had with Secretary Hale, who is now in the private sector, and others, that the Defense Department will continue to be as aggressive as they are now, or even more aggressive than they've been in the past, at talking to members about the sequester and not worrying so much about the grand bargain piece, but making the case very adamantly that this is really bad business for the country and not just bad business for the Department of Defense.
And that's what they've done all along. I mean, that's if you go back particularly to what Leon Panetta was saying, he didn't get involved very much in the grand bargain. That's been the argument of those who believe that defense should not be treated as part of the grand bargain. To the extent that members of Congress, especially the new Republican members on both sides of the Capitol Hill, will listen to that, that would be great. The question is whether they will listen and whether there will be a push, as I say, from the White House to support that kind of approach. If there isn't, and if it's simply a function of a grand bargain, then that is well above the pay grade of just about everybody in defense, except perhaps the secretary.
Could the change in the dynamic on Capitol Hill, not just the switch on the Senate side, but some of the changes in leadership on the House side as well, vis-a-vis appropriations and HASC, could they push any of that on the White House? Could they at least push the White House to be more active or more involved or more forceful or more something?
Well, they certainly could, and I hope they will. Again, the White House has to be receptive to this. OMB has to be receptive, and the Oval Office has to be receptive. Now, there's a lot going on in the world that is clearly demanding American resources in a way that very few people anticipated a few years ago. More troops going to Iraq, troops staying in Afghanistan, commitments from Yemen to West Africa, problems with North Korea. I mean, there's certainly a strong, strong case for maintaining readiness and not letting it ebb away, as happens to be the case, and, of course, building for the future. I didn't even mention China and Russia. So it may well be that if Congress, and on both sides of the aisle, actually, pushes for doing something about the sequester as it relates to defense, there may be more willingness in the administration to listen to that.
Does that kind of CSIS. It's my sense, too, from what I've been reading, especially from think tanks around town, that some of this may be tied not just to force restructuring, but force strategizing. What does the size of the ground force look like? What does the ground force consist of? Is it only thought of as far as the Army, or is the Marine Corps a part of that? I'm seeing, I guess, more moving parts in this discussion than I think I've seen in the last probably 5 or 10 years. Is that a fair observation on my part? Are you seeing the same thing, Doug?
Well, I think there has been a debate for the last few years as to what the Army's size should be. One of the issues, of course, is if you're going to reduce the Army, do you also want to reduce the National Guard and the reserves? We've had essentially an operational reserve for the last decade. They've been fighting out there alongside the actives. Are we going to go back to some kind of strategic reserve? If that's the case, cutting the active Army may be a problem. If we go to an operational reserve, then maybe there's more flexibility there. And let's not forget, we've already been cutting the active Army, and the Marine Corps is coming down as well. So that's one major issue. A second issue, of course, is where do we think the Army will fight next? And the answer to that is we don't know, because we never know. And we've never predicted it right. Mr. Gates pointed that out, and many others have as well. So you've got an issue there. Another question, of course, is just what is the role of cyber? It's clearly very, very important. How much are we spending on it? Should we spend more on it? What kind of resources do we have? And then there's space, a whole other issue. And remember, the Russians were the ones who were launching some of our vehicles. They don't do that anymore. We don't want them to. So we've got a host of issues there, as well as some of the classic ones, like the need for a new bomber, what about the carrier force, and so on.
As we try to figure out what the inventory should look like 10 and 20 and 30 years from now, Dove, those decisions are starting now, but they're starting in the context of the budget situation the way that it is today. Is that the way that you have to do it, or is that even the best way to go about it, because that assumes that budget times will be tight for the next half century, and that may or may not be the case?
Well, it's certainly difficult to predict that it will be the case. It never has been the case. We've certainly seen budget increases and budget declines, but we've never seen a steady squeeze of the kind that we've had the last couple of years. And even the sequester eventually runs out of steam. It's a 10-year business. But you're absolutely right. Decisions made today are going to shape the size of the force, the composition of the force, the look of the force over the next several decades. And we don't know what the world will be like in the next several decades. If you had spoken to me, and we actually did, when we spoke a year ago around this time, did we know that Crimea would become part of Russia again? Did we know that Russians would be in eastern Ukraine? I mean, these are things. Did we hear of ISIS? How can we possibly predict that we know exactly what the world will be like 30 or 20 or 15 years from now, when we couldn't predict how it would be like 15 months from now?